Chapter 27. Friday, July 15th. Judge Everson banged his gavel at 12:30 and decreed that district court proceedings were thereby resumed. He noticed that a third person had appeared at Advocate Giannini's table. It was Holger Palmgren in a wheelchair.
"Hello, Holger," Judge Everson said. "I haven't seen you in a courtroom in quite a while."
"Good day to you, Judge Everson. Some cases are so complicated that these younger lawyers need a little assistance."
"I thought you had retired."
"I've been ill, but Advocate Giannini engaged me as assistant counsel in this case."
"I see."
Giannini cleared her throat. "It is germane to the case that Advocate Palmgren was, until his illness, Lisbeth Salander's guardian."
"I have no intention of commenting on that matter," Judge Everson said.
He nodded to Giannini to begin, and she stood up. She had always disliked the Swedish tradition of carrying on court proceedings informally while sitting around a table, almost as though the occasion were a dinner party. She felt better when she could speak standing up. "I think we should begin with the concluding comments from this morning. Dr. Teleborian, what leads you so consistently to dismiss as untrue everything that Lisbeth Salander says?"
"Because her statements so obviously are untrue," replied Teleborian.
He was relaxed. Giannini turned to the judge. "Judge Everson, Dr. Teleborian claims that Lisbeth Salander tells lies and that she fantasizes. The defense will now demonstrate that every word in her autobiography is true. We will present copious documentation, both visual and written, as well as the testimony of witnesses. We have now reached the point in this trial when the prosecutor has presented the principal elements of his case. We have listened, and we now know the exact nature of the accusations against Lisbeth Salander." Giannini's mouth was suddenly dry, and she felt her hands shake. She took a deep breath and sipped her mineral water. Then she placed her hands in a firm grip on the back of the chair so that they would not betray her nervousness. "From the prosecutor's presentation, we may conclude that he has a great many opinions, but a woeful shortage of evidence. He believes that Lisbeth Salander shot Carl Magnus Lundin in Stallarholmen. He claims that she went to Gossaberga to kill her father. He assumes that my client is a paranoid schizophrenic and mentally ill in every sense. And he bases this assumption on information from a single source, to wit, Dr. Teleborian." She paused to catch her breath and forced herself to speak slowly. "As it now stands, the case presented by the prosecutor rests on the testimony of Dr. Teleborian. If he is right, then my client would be best served by receiving the expert psychiatric care that both he and the prosecutor are seeking." Pause. "But if Dr. Teleborian is wrong, this prosecution case must be seen in a different light. Furthermore, if he is lying, then my client is now, here in this courtroom, being subjected to a violation of her civil rights, a violation that has gone on for many years." She turned to face Ekstrom. "What we shall do this afternoon is to show that your witness is a false witness, and that you as prosecutor have been deceived into accepting these false testimonies." Teleborian flashed a smile. He held out his hands and nodded to Giannini, as if applauding her presentation. Giannini now turned to the judge. "Your Honour, I will show that Dr. Teleborian's so-called forensic psychiatric investigation is nothing but a deception from start to finish. I will show that he is lying about Lisbeth Salander. I will show that my client has in the past been subjected to gross violation of her rights, and I will show that she is just as sane and intelligent as anyone in this room."
"Excuse me, but—"
Ekstrom began. "Just a moment." She raised a finger. "I have for 2 days allowed you to talk uninterrupted. Now it's my turn." She turned back to Judge Everson. "I would not make so serious an accusation before the court if I did not have ample evidence to support it."
"By all means, continue," the judge said. "But I don't want to hear any long-winded conspiracy theories. Bear in mind that you can be charged with slander for false statements that are made before a court.
Thank you. I will bear that in mind. She turned to Teleborian. He still seemed entertained by the situation. The defence has repeatedly asked to be allowed to examine Lisbeth Salander's medical records from the time when she, in her early teens, was committed to your care at St. Stephen's. Why have we not been shown these records?
Because a district court decreed that they were classified. That decision was made out of solicitude for Lisbeth Salander. But if a higher court were to rescind that decision, I would naturally hand them over.
Thank you. For how many nights during the 2 years that Lisbeth Salander spent at St. Stephen's was she kept in restraints?
I couldn't recall that offhand.
She herself claims that it was 380 out of the total of 786 days and nights she spent at St. Stephen's.
I can't possibly answer as to the exact number of days, but that is a fantastic exaggeration. Where do those figures come from?
From her autobiography.
And you believe that today she is able to remember accurately each night she was kept in restraints? Well, that's preposterous.
Is it? How many nights do you recall?
Elizabeth Salander was an extremely aggressive and violence-prone patient, and undoubtedly she was placed in a stimulus-free room on a number of occasions. Perhaps I should explain the purpose of a stimulus-free room.
Thank you. That won't be necessary.
According to theory, it is a room in which a patient is denied any sensory input that might provoke agitation. For how many days and nights did 13-year-old Lisbeth Salander lie strapped down in such a room?
It would be, I would estimate perhaps on 30 occasions during the time she was at the hospital.
30. Now that's only a fraction of the 380 that she claims.
Undeniably.
Not even 10% of her figure.
Yes.
Would her medical records perhaps give us more accurate information?
It's possible.
Excellent, Giannini said, taking out a large sheaf of paper from her briefcase.
Then I ask to be allowed to hand over to the court a copy of Lisbeth Salander's medical records from St. Stephen's. I have counted the number of notes about the restraining straps and find that the figure is 381, one more than my client claims.
Teleborian's eyes widened.
Stop. This is classified information. Where did you get that from?
I got it from a reporter at Millennium Magazine. It can hardly be classified if it's lying around a newspaper's offices. Perhaps I should add that extracts from these medical records were published today in Millennium. I believe, therefore, that even this district court should have the opportunity to look at the records themselves.
This is illegal.
No, it isn't. Lisbeth Salander has given her permission for the extracts to be published. My client has nothing to hide.
Your client has been declared incompetent and has no right to make any such decision for herself.
We'll come back to the declaration of incompetence. But first we need to examine what happened to her at St. Stephen's.
Judge Everson frowned as he accepted the papers that Giannini handed to him.
I haven't made a copy for the prosecutor. He received a copy of this privacy-invading document more than a month ago.
How did that happen? The judge said.
Professor Ekstrom got a copy of these classified records from Teleborian at a meeting which took place in his office at 5 p.m. on Saturday, June 4th, this year.
Is that correct?
Judge Everson said.
Ekstrom's first impulse was to deny it. Then he realized that Giannini might somehow have evidence.
I requested permission to read parts of the records if I signed a confidentiality agreement, Ekstrom said. I had to make sure that Salander had the history she was alleged to have.
Thank you, Giannini said. This means that we now have confirmation that Dr. Teleborian not only tells lies, but also broke the law by disseminating records that he himself claims are classified.
Duly noted, said the judge.